Well, hello and welcome back to The Sweet Spot, sponsored by SBK. I'm Warren Ashurst, and I'm delighted to say I'm joined once again this week by Steve Palmer to preview this week's golf. And Steve, I was going to ask you how you are, but I can imagine that there wasn't a dry eye in the house on Sunday.
Good morning, Wazza. Yeah, very emotional week. Yeah, probably the most gripping final round we've ever seen. You know, I don't want to yield to recency bias here, but I think that was the most dramatic golf tournament we've ever seen. You know, given what was at stake, the circumstances of the Grand Slam. I've got my cap on here. I'm doffing my Rory McIlroy cap to Rory McIlroy, because I just wasn't sure he'd be able to handle that pressure. It's been building for years, isn't it? Yeah, the last time I backed McIlroy for the Masters was 2023, and I thought, you know, it's getting harder every year. I wondered if I'd ever be able to do that again, because it felt like it was getting more difficult every year. The Grand Slam dream was slipping away. Rory McIlroy never gave up on the dream, and proved he had the guts to do it. You know, that playoff performance in particular, absolutely stunning, you know, to hold himself together for perfection in the playoffs. So caps are doffed.
Well, we'll have plenty more time to discuss what happened at Augusta very shortly, but just to flag up an offer from SBK for you. For all new SBK users, we'll get £30 in free bets when they sign up and bet £10 for the first time. And head to SBK for lots of other offers and promotions throughout the weekend. Full T's and C's apply, 18 plus, begambleaware.org. But as Steve has already said, before we get into this week's action, we cannot spend a small time, it has to be a decent time, on what happened over the course of the weekend. We all know, of course, that Rory McIlroy completed the Grand Slam of golf and collected his first ever green jacket. I mean, Steve, the emotions for everybody watching, you can only just imagine what it was like for McIlroy going through it, because, you know, we'll start off at the first where he double bogeys and straight away his lead is lost to Bryson DeChambeau. He then scrambles his way back and he looks to be in control around the turn and looking like he's built up a four-shot lead, which might well be unassailable at that stage. And then all of a sudden it starts to unravel again. I mean, I don't imagine that you were sat there comfortably either. You must have been wondering what on earth was going on.
Well, it was your classic Rory roller coaster ride, isn't it? We've been through many roller coasters with Rory through the years, but none have been as important as this one. Yeah, it was the circumstance that made this, gave such an edge to this. And Sunday night, normally only bets get me emotional, was it? But yeah, Sunday night I was emotional for other reasons. It was quite a strange feeling for me. But obviously we've been following McIlroy's entire life on this Grand Slam quest, haven't we? And it started way back when. And I remember in 2010, I spent some time with him, Wazza, in 2010, but before all this happened, he was world number 9 at the time. Mm-hmm. And the Racing Post owners at the time were one of Rory's main sponsors. And I spotted Neil Hughes. Neil Hughes was one of the Racing Post owners back in the day. Mm-hmm. He was embracing Rory McIlroy as he walked off on Sunday night. I don't know whether you spotted him. He was embracing all sorts, but Neil Hughes was there. And Neil Hughes has been there from the very start with McIlroy. And he was the chap that organised my trip over to Royal Dublin to play with Rory McIlroy in 2010. He bought me this jumper, did Neil Hughes. So it was the moment that really got me when I saw those two together, because it brought all the memories back of back then. It was a great day at Royal Dublin. And then we went to Dublin City Centre went out with Rory McIlroy. He wasn't so famous at the time that couldn't do that. He wouldn't be able to do that now, go out in Dublin, because he'd just be overwhelmed with people. But it just brought all the memories flooding back. I mean, it's been such a journey since then, hasn't it? That was 15 years ago. And he had so much success early on in his career. And then you wonder whether he could get this elusive Masters. You're right. It was, I'm absolutely exhausted. I could have done with sleeping all day yesterday because I was so exhausted. But three golf tournaments instead.
Well, I have to admit, I felt exactly the same yesterday. My 18-year-old was sat there watching it with me, and he was going through the different shots, and he was sort of saying, you know, that's an incredible shot, that's an incredible shot. And he was saying to me, you know, from having watched Masters before, which one stands out? And, you know, you look back at years gone by of Tiger Woods chipping in at the 16th and Bubba Watson hitting that shot round the trees in the playoff as well. But the shot that McIlroy hit on the 15th around the tree, it will forever remain in my memory in terms of just phenomenal golf shots.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. I just could not believe what I was seeing there. You know, given what had come previously, as you say, it was so many bites of this cherry, wasn't it? The Masters is there to be lost. The double bogey at the first is lost. Fights his way back into it. The disaster at 13. You know, the craziness of this round can't be underplayed. You know, he's probably played the worst shot of his life at the 13th hole. He's 20 yards right of target. With a very short shot from just over 80 yards at the 13th, to put it in the woods. I couldn't believe what I was seeing there, and I felt so sorry for him, because it's just like, you know, how do you recover from that? Yeah. But then you recover from that if you're Rory McIlroy with the best shot you've ever hit in your life. The shot at the 15th was just ludicrous. It's so difficult because those trees, overhanging branches, block that out. Once he hit the drive, I thought, oh, that's too far left. He's not going to be able to go for it because it's so difficult. He's had to banana it around the trees from miles away. It was only a 7-iron because he's so powerful. And then he's landed it in the only place you could land it to get it close to the hole. The difficulty of that shot was incredible. And I could not believe what I was seeing. And you know, I'd be going through the history books. Obviously, I wasn't alive in 1935, but in 1935, Gene Saracen, everyone bangs on about Gene Saracen. It annoys me a lot, actually, because Gene Saracen won his Masters to complete the career Grand Slam in the second ever Masters. But it was the 15th hole, you see. That's why I'm bringing up Gene Saracen, who should probably be laid to rest now. It was the 15th hole. He made an albatross, you see, on the Sunday. So the 15th hole... for Gene Saracen was the turning point, and the 15th hole was the turning point for McIlroy. I know he missed the eagle putt, but you know, the strength of mind to produce a shot of that quality on the 15th hole. From there, you felt he'd won it. You felt he'd go on to win it from there, and then the roller coaster just kept continuing. Yeah, I'm glad your son got to watch it. My son, too young really to stay out that late, so he missed the action. I've replayed a few of the shots to him yesterday. But an incredible journey. And, obviously it transcends betting, doesn't it, was it? Because, the betting went terribly for me last week. Yeah, I jumped aboard Ludovic Aubert at the halfway stage at 33-1, topped up on Ludovic Aubert at 40-1 on before the final round. I had top three bets, top five bets. It was Ludovic Aubert betting-wise, but Rory McIlroy, emotionally, you take betting out of it and there's only one man you want to win. And I'm just so relieved. And, we look to the future with great confidence now, don't we, as Rory McIlroy fans?
We do. We'll talk a bit more, I'm sure, about Rory McIlroy on the way in terms of this week's sweet spot.
He's not playing this week, isn't he? He's wisely taken the week off. It's a signature event. So Rory McIlroy and Hideki Matsuyama are not playing the RBC Heritage. They're the two that have been very sensible about this. It's crazy that they get they have a signature event straight after it. But so Rory's going to go and see his parents, I think. It was a very emotional media conference, and they're asking about what he's going to do next week when he was talking on Sunday night. And he's going to go back to Northern Ireland and see his parents, who gave up so much to develop him as a youngster. So well done. Thank goodness he's doing that. You know, the RBC Heritage pales into insignificance. He's achieved a lifelong dream. He's the Grand Slam champion. He's the only one in the last 59 years. Go and celebrate it with the people that matter most to you. You'll be having a terrific week.
Just one last word for the moment, Steve, on McIlroy before we look at other things to take out of the Masters. And that was his caddy, who has been a lot of criticism for a lot of people and former golf stars suggesting that maybe he should have been changing his caddy. He stuck with him. They've been boyhood mates. And I think that was probably, barring when he broke down on the green, when I saw the interviews afterwards, that was probably the most emotional he was when they talked about how it kind of stuck together.
Yeah, absolutely. And key information that Rory revealed in that media conference. I mean, we talked about how this tournament was in Rory's hands. It got away from him. It's back in his hands. It got away from him. They have four bites of the cherry to get the job done here. But the key moment came. Yeah, when he's missed the putt to win the Masters on the 72nd hole, obviously emotionally he's in trouble there, isn't he? He's going into a playoff with Justin Rose. Justin Rose, obviously a fierce competitor. You know, he's got hardly any time to prepare for that playoff. you know, daylight runs out quickly at the Masters. Mm. You know, at 1 a.m. it would have been dark, you know, our time. So they only had about 55 minutes to get the playoff done if it had gone on and on and on. But so they had to rush Rory in. There was no time after the 72nd hole, straight into the playoff. But there was a key moment where Harry Diamond said to him on the buggy to the first tee, well, mate, we would have taken this on Monday morning, wouldn't we? Mm. And I think, honestly, I think that is magnificent. Like, you know, those words are absolutely perfect. Because McIlroy, you know, McIlroy would have been absolutely frazzled after missing that putt. And his mate, cool as a cucumber, says that. I cannot think of a better thing to say. I'm getting a bit emotional thinking about it. Because I think Harry Diamond might have won the Masters for him there. Because can you think of a better thing to say? And he's absolutely right. On Monday morning, when you're going into Masters Week on Monday morning, you know, you say, right, would you take a playoff now? Of course you would. And I think you saw it on the tee there at 18, first hole of playoff. McIlroy, he gave Justin Rose a handshake. He looked back in the zone. And I don't think he would have got back in the zone without Harry Diamond. I think that was genius. And that's what happens when you've got your best mate alongside you rather than a professional caddy. I mean, a lot of the criticism through the years have been, you know, get a professional caddy. You know, get your Joe LaCarvers, your Billy Fosters. But because he's got his best mate there, his best mate knows how to handle the sensitivities of it. You know, Rory's a real deep thinker, and he wants his mate next to him. And I think you're absolutely right, Wazza. I'm glad you brought that up because I think it was a triumph for Rory McIlroy, obviously. There's also a triumph for Harry Diamond.
It's also
what they can do together. Sorry, Wazza.
No, I was going to say it was also an absolute triumph for his daughter, who was a superstar throughout the whole week after that put on the par three tournament, and then being there at the end, of course, as well to see him celebrate. I mean, just all round, it was a fantastic day. If you're a golf fan, you cannot not enjoy that. It was just absolutely brilliant emotion, unscripted genius from Rory McIlroy. We have to mention a couple of the other players as well, Steve. I mean,
can I just say one more thing? I'm not going to let you leave Rory behind. You're the ultimate professional, and it's going to be hard to rein me in because you're like a jockey, and I'm the horse that's running away from you. But I just want to say one more thing. I know we've got to enjoy this moment, and we're all enjoying this moment. But I don't think we're stopping here. I don't think we're stopping here. I think the horse is getting stronger. I think the horse has been released now, and we're going to the USPGA at Quail Hollow in a month's time. Yeah. Quail Hollow is Rory McIlroy's favourite PGA Tour venue. He's won there four times. I mean, he's going to be an overwhelming favourite there. You know, we talk about monkeys coming off the back. We like that expression on Sweet Spot. The monkey's off his back. You know, he's had like an army of gorillas riding his back at Augusta through these years. I mean, they all leapt off. That's why he reacted so like he did on the when he won it. He's just fallen to the ground because he's got to allow all these monkeys, like Monkey World, to go flying off. So McIlroy with that monkey off his back, he's going to be so potent going forward. He's going to Quail Hollow, his favourite track. It's very difficult to see him not contending. I'll try and calm down. It's very difficult to see him not contending at Quail Hollow. And then he goes to Royal Portrush. A track he knows like the back of his hand, a track he's been playing with Harry Diamond and the rest of them growing up for the Open Championship. We'll see Poppy at the Open Championship. We'll see his parents at the Open Championship. I think, Dave Clark will be very excited because we've been talking about how if he wins the Masters, if Rory wins the Masters, he could win everything. He could win everything. I think the US Open would be the hardest one. He could win the calendar Grand Slam.
There's certainly an argument to be made for that. Like you say, with the two courses that he knows so well coming up as well, but just having that pressure release must be absolutely huge for him. On that theme, by the way, I can tell you that SBK are running a special on Rory McIlroy to win both the 2025 Open and the PGA Championship. The offer is 41-1 for McIlroy to win those two events. If you fancy him now, as Steve says, to go from strength to strength. I was going to move on to Justin Rose next because if ever anybody was going to lose a tournament like that in a heartbreaking way, you would feel that Justin Rose has got the mental strength, Steve, to bounce back from it and probably be even stronger because of it.
Yeah, it was a difficult situation, wasn't it, for European golf fans? Because you had Rory McIlroy. Obviously, he's the one we all want to win for Grand Slam purposes. But, you know, Justin Rose has been through Augusta heartbreak through the years. You know, he's lost a playoff before. He's three times he's finished second now. So it was an awkward one. And I was saying to my lady wife, who was, you know, it shows the level of drama that we were watching, that my wife wanted to watch the entirety as well. You know, this was history in the making. And yeah, I said to her, this is so awkward. Like, all of us are sort of pulling for Rory McIlroy, but they're Justin Rose. We've always wanted Justin Rose to win the Masters. He's much older than Rory McIlroy. The chances are running out for him. I was thinking, like, how would Justin Rose feel if he was the party pooper there? You know, he'd feel a bit awkward about it, wouldn't he? You know, it'd remind me of when I was at the Open for when Tom Watson nearly won the Open at about 100 years old. I remember being there, and everyone was pulling for the old guy. Then Stuart Sink won the playoff, and everyone's like, you know, Stuart. I remember being in the media conference, Stuart Sink comes. Yeah, I was thinking, if Justin Rose, so I thought Justin Rose was going to be the villain, but then, yeah, at the same time, you know, yeah, it's just too much to take in, wasn't it? Really, I mean, it would have been better if it was Bryson DeChambeau as the, you know, because we didn't really care whether he won the Masters. So hopefully,
I did feel a slight bit of guilt, I have to admit, when I actually didn't cheer Justin Rose's putt going in on the 18th, because I just felt, like you said before, you know, everybody would ordinarily in the UK be desperate for Justin Rose to win another major. Yeah. I think the fact that he's won a US Open before means that it's not beyond him to go and win another major tournament now. And you mentioned it in terms of him getting on in terms of years, Steve, but do you feel like he's got another major in him, Justin?
Well, he looks after himself, doesn't he? He's not had any real injury problems through the years. You know, he's a very fit 44-year-old man. And experience counts for so much, particularly at Augusta. I mean, you often see the old guys. You know, Bernard Langer nearly made the cut. Fred Couples was making eagles. His Augusta dream is not over. And I'll tell you what definitely isn't over is his Ryder Cup dream. You know, we're going to need experienced campaigners in an away match in America, the most hostile environment Europe has ever faced, I would suggest, coming up in the Ryder Cup. I think Justin Rose is an absolute certainty for that team now. Luke Donald will realise that that is the sort of asset you need, an experienced campaigner who's played at the highest level and is still contending for majors. It wasn't a flash in the pan. He was contending in the Open last year. He's still contending regularly in majors. So, yeah, Justin Rose, the future's bright. And the future for the European Ryder Cup team is bright. Like, Europeans winning
everything. Well, exactly. And I was going to move on to that because of Ludvig Aubert, who, I have to say, I know Justin Rose shot 66, but I actually think Aubert played the best golf on Sunday. He was absolutely phenomenal, tee to green, just couldn't hold the putts when he needed to. And then, of course, you know, at a time when probably it had slipped out of his hands at the 18th, he had that disappointing final hole, but again, he's another one you must feel is going to have a green jacket on his back at some stage.
Yeah, he loves Augusta. You know, second on debut, seventh last week, and not flattered by that finishing position, was he? I mean, he was third going into third teeing off on the 18th hole. I thought my top five bet was a certainty there, and triple bogey on the final hole. You know, he had a birdie putt to take the lead on the 16th. If he holds his putt from the fringe on the 16th, he's in the lead. He had a very off-putting build-up for me. I was kicking myself early in the tournament because obviously Ludvig Aubert was on my radar for this Masters all year, and then the two outings he had prior to it put me off. But then he got back into the groove and he was brilliant from the off. His temperament is fantastic. I mean, yeah, that triple bogey on the 72nd hole was nothing to do with temperament. He was actually just trying to make a birdie from a really difficult spot. He was being greedy out of the fairway bunker there and got too cute and just and caught the lip there. But that just shows that's a player trying to make birdie, trying to win the Masters. Temperament-wise, fantastic. Ludvig Aubert will win the Masters at some stage, I'm sure.
And we've talked a lot about Europeans, but we have to talk about the American Challenge, which faltered towards the end as well. Bryson DeChambeau and Scottie Scheffler, who was always there or thereabouts throughout the whole week, Steve, but just couldn't seem to get close enough to put a real challenge in.
You're absolutely right. I mean, Bryson DeChambeau, I wonder whether he was a bit burnt out, because I don't know if you were following. He was hitting about a million balls on the practice ground every night. Like he'd build up towards the round, play a million balls in the morning, play his round, and then he'd be there until it got dark on the practice ground afterwards. He's like a Duracell bunny, isn't he? But I mean, his performance on Sunday suggested he was absolutely knackered. He was awful on Sunday, wasn't he? I mean, his iron play had been pretty ragged all week, but he had the short game sparkle to stay in it. It was short game that kept him in it. But, you know, iron play so important at Augusta, and Bryson's iron play was ragged. He was just, everything was going left. It was, he didn't really give McIlroy a challenge. And you compare it to McIlroy's iron play. You know, this is the key point. You know, this is why McIlroy has become a Masters champion, because his iron play has improved so much. His iron play last week, his wedge play, yeah, traditionally a weakness of McIlroy, was magnificent. You know, it's become a strength. He's a better golfer now, Rory. I told you I'd get back to Rory. He's a better golfer now than he's ever been. He says that himself. He's peaked at 35, which is the traditional age that golfers used to peak. It's become a young man's game, but you know, his temperament's better now. His all round game is better now. And Bryson DeChambeau still got an iron play weakness. Scotty Scheffler, I mean, what's that? Seven tournaments this year without a win now. Winning everything last year, won nine times last year, played seven this year without a win. He's a defending champion again this week, RBC Heritage. He's just not playing at the same level, is he? He's a bit ragged at times. But he still finished fourth. It's amazing. He can play sort of his D game and still finish fourth. See how he goes.
No, exactly. That's what's impressive about him, isn't it? He doesn't have to play at his best and he still challenges. But I have to say, you know, it is easy, like you say, Steve, because you remember things that have been more recent. But I do think that's possibly the best Masters we've ever had.
And I do think possibly the best golf tournament we've ever had. I mean, I've watched, you know, how many golf tournaments I've watched in my life. I dread to think. I feel like I've wasted a lot of my life watching golf tournaments when I could have been out in the sunshine. But I'm glad I wasn't out in the sunshine on Sunday. I think that was the best tournament I've ever seen. And from a betting perspective, a total disaster. But from a humanity perspective, I felt like it was a triumph for humanity, because I was talking about the pressure that McIlroy was under there, and it just seemed like it was too much for a human brain to handle. Like every year, it got harder to win the Masters. You know, time's running out. You know, every failure makes it harder to do, doesn't it? So I wish I had kept the faith with him, but on 2023, I just felt I just can't put myself through this any longer.
It was just understandable. I don't think he could put himself through it much longer, to be honest. I mean, we could be here all day talking about what happened at Augusta, because there was so much to talk about. But we do have three tournaments to look forward to this week. And we'll start off, as ever, in chronological order with the DP World Tour, because they head to China this week for the China Open. Steve will give us a rundown of the course and the amount of tips that he'll be giving us very shortly. But you've got the likes of Hao Tong Li, Keita Nakajima, Rasmus Nergaard Peterson, Wenyi Ding towards the top of the betting, the likes of Jordan Smith and Matthew Jordan. DP World regulars also in the field this week. Steve, firstly, tell us about the course.
I love your enthusiasm, Wazza. This is the ultimate after the Lord Mayor's show, isn't it? You know, the dictionary definition, you know, going from that Masters, the Grand Slam, to the Volvo China Open, which, with names that are not exciting to many viewers. But, we've got our punting heads back on now, haven't we? It doesn't matter what the quality of the tournament. Yeah, the odds are the same. You still get paid out on a winner the same as you would in the Masters. So, I'll be knuckling down yesterday. I was the ultimate professional. didn't finish till about 1 a.m. last night. Spent the entire day working on these three golf tournaments. So I hope it was worth it. I wanted to just go to the pub and have a load of stout to celebrate the victory. But, we're at a really strangely named golf course, was it? Enhance Anting Golf Club. We're at Enhance Anting Golf Club in Shanghai, China. 7,168 yards, par 71, three par fives, a Robert Trent Jones Jr. design. It's a flat track. It's hosting for the first time this week. Tree-lined fairways. Lots of enormous water hazards I've seen. So I think accuracy from tee to green is the key to success. Good weather, sunny, hot and calm for all 4 days. a field of 156 going to post, and place your bets by 11:40 p.m. on Wednesday night. Very easy to be sluggish after that Masters, but you can't be sluggish if you want to bet on the China Open. You've got to get your bets on by bedtime Wednesday night for most people.
Yep. Remember that time difference then in terms of the China Open. So how many picks are we going to have for this DP World Tour event, Steve, for this week?
We got five China Open selections.
Five selections. And who is the main pick?
Wen Yiding, who we've been following a lot on Sweet Spot, pretty much ever since he turned professional. He turned professional at the end of last year. This is a former world number three amateur. He got a DP World Tour card through the Global Amateur Pathway Rankings. He gave up a spot in last week's Masters, was he? He could have played in the Masters last week if he had stayed an amateur, but he turned pro. He obviously backs himself to get in the Masters by rights at some stage. He finished fifth in the Australian Open in December. He settled nicely on the DP World Tour this year. Form figures of 20-14-14 from his last three starts. Improving all the time. Teeing up in his homeland this week, of course. Difficult to see him failing to contend because his record in China is understandably excellent. He was runner-up in the China Open, this event, in 2020. So he's a 16-year-old amateur and he finished runner-up in this. He's won the Chinese Amateur Championship three times, 2019, 2020, 2021. Then he became a college star in the United States. He was third in the 2021 China Open. He was seventh in the 2023 China Open. He was third in a Challenge Tour event in China last year, in 2023, sorry. He was 11th in that event last year. So, he's proven, it's very, very difficult to see when you ding out the frame here because, he's done well in this tournament when he was about... he was an embryo. Now he's a 20-year-old who settled on the DP World Tour and a fully-fledged professional. So, Wen Yiding is the man to beat for me.
Just when you mentioned about the amateur status there before, it did make me think as well last week just how difficult Augusta is if you'd ever needed any confirmation that none of the amateurs actually qualified for the weekend. They all missed the cut. So it just shows you just the test that it is.
It was a poor set of amateurs. And the one amateur I thought might have the ability to make the cut completely disgraced himself and shouldn't be allowed back at Augusta ever, urinating into the creek. I mean, I couldn't believe the conduct of that fella. Could you, was it? I think they should have said, that you're disqualified. I think that should be instant disqualification. Urinating over the Cathedral of Pines. I mean, that's tantamount to going into like the church on Christmas Day and just urinating over the vicar, in my eyes. Absolutely outrageous conduct. And then he didn't think he'd done anything wrong. He was laughing about it. I think he disgraced himself. He should be banned for life.
I'm not sure I can go anywhere else after that. We'll just get to the next tip for this China Open. So we've got one tip, Wen Yiding so far. Who's tip number two, Steve?
Keita Nakajima, the main threat to Wen Yiding. I mean, this is a potential party pooper. We talked about Justin Rose nearly pooping all over the party. Obviously, all the China Open galleries will be hoping Wen Yiding or Hao Tong Li, one of the other China. But I think Keita Nakajima could be the party pooper here. Brilliant player, former world number one amateur, four-time winner on the Japan Tour, made his DP World Tour breakthrough in the Indian Open last year. He's finished second in his last two tournaments, Singapore Classic, Indian Open. Stays in Asia for this week. So, I see a thrilling duel between these two brilliant youngsters, Wen Yiding, Keita Nakajima.
Okay, so that's two of Steve's five tips for the DP World Tour event this week. And the third tip, Steve?
Sam Bairstow, who we've been backing a lot lately. I feel it's only a matter of time before he becomes a DP World Tour winner. Great amateur, won on the Challenge Tour in 2023, has contended loads of times on the DP World Tour last year, and he started this year impressively too. He tied 23rd on his China Open debut last year. He's had four top 20s already this year, 10th in the Qatar Masters, 9th in the Joburg Open. And I think he's going to take a shine to this week's venue, Wazir. It's not one we know well, but we know it was designed by Robert Trent Jones Jr. He also designed Alcanada in Mallorca. Alcanada in Mallorca. I expect you've been to Mallorca a few times, Wazir. And Alcanada, Bairstow is attached to that course. He's the touring pro for Alcanada. It's been his practice base for many years, actually. And he finished fourth at Alcanada in the 2023 Challenge Tour Grand Final. So I think there'd be similarities between Alcanada and Hans Anting, which makes Bairstow a really interesting runner for me.
Okay, so Sam Bairstow, pick number three for this week's event. Two more to go. Who's pick number four, Steve?
Angel Ayora. For similar reasons to Bairstow's, I think he'll like the course. Ayora finished second in last year's Challenge Tour Grand Final at Alcanada. He also finished second in a Challenge Tour event in China a couple of weeks before that Grand Final, the Hangzhou Open. I think this lad is pure class. We discussed him a lot on Sweet Spot. I think his career is about to take off, and it could be this week.
Okay, pick number four is complete, and that leaves one more for the China Open this week. Steve, who is the fifth and final selection?
Oliver Lindell. Oliver Lindell, a 26-year-old Finn I've had my eye on for a while, a strong all-rounder, won three times on the Nordic Golf League. He's been a regular contender on the Challenge Tour, DP World Tour rookie this season, and loads of eye-catching form in China. He tied with Ayora in second place in that Hangzhou Open last year. He was third in the Hainan Open last year in China, 10th in the Hainan Open in 2017, and he was fourth in the Challenge Tour Grand Final at Alcanada last year. So lots of reasons to like Oliver Lindell, and he's absolutely massive prize.
Okay, so that is the five selections from Steve Palmer for the China Open. Don't forget, we will go through all of those selections again when we come towards the end of this week's show. We're going
just
to turn our attention
the Rory
to
Rory McIlroy. Yeah, just Rory.
You can't see that enough, Steve. To be honest,
actually, tight. I have to put it like this. Tight. In my brain.
We've got the strange scenario of two PGA Tour events this week, one being obviously considerably bigger than the other, and we'll come to the RBC Heritage shortly. But firstly, it's the Corrales Punta Cana Championship. And before we get Steve's thoughts on the course for this week, when you look at the field, you've got the likes of Keith Mitchell, Harry Hall, Ryan Fox, Thorbjørn Olesen. So there are some decent strength players in there. Seamus Power also in the field as well. What can you tell us firstly about the track, Steve?
Yes, Corrales Golf Course, Punta Cana Resort, Dominican Republic, 7,670 yards, par 72, four par fives. This tournament started as a Korn Ferry Tour event in 2016. It got PGA Tour status in 2018. Tom Fazio design by the coast. Wind is usually the main defence. You have generous fairways, paspalum grass fairways, we must mention. Not much rough. Got a mixture of sunshine and clouds this week. Light to moderate breezes and a field of 120 going to post.
Okay, so the Dominican Republic is the lovely venue for this week's Punta Cana Championship. And how many selections, Steve, for this?
We got four selections, was it?
Four selections. And who is the main tip for this event?
Pearson Coody. Another sweet spot regular, a three-time champion on the Korn Ferry Tour, a 25-year-old who's clearly good enough to become a PGA Tour champion. One of those Korn Ferry Tour wins came in Panama, which is not far from the Dominican Republic, a couple of hours on a flight, both tropical climates. Coody was in terrible form when he arrived for his Corrales debut last year. He was struggling to make a cut anywhere. He had some injury niggles that were bothering him, but he fell in love with the Corrales course. He opened with a pair of 67s. He finished the tournament in 18th place. It turned his year around. He went on to finish fifth at Colonial. He was second in the ISCO Championship when we were on him at a massive price, lost in a playoff. And this season, lots of positive signs. He was 12th in the Bermuda Championship, another tropical island location. 7th in the Bahamas on the Korn Ferry Tour, another tropical island location. 9th in that Panama event again. 2nd in another Challenge Tour event. Yeah, the most appealing bet of the tournament for me. I think he's going to make a PGA Tour breakthrough on Sunday.
Okay, Pearson Coody, the first of four selections for Steve for the Punta Cana Championship. Who's pick number two, Steve?
It's Matt Wallace, who won this tournament in 2023, fended off Nikolai Hoggar to claim a maiden PGA Tour title. Five-time winner on the DP World Tour, won the European Masters for us last year. And he's got Ryder Cup aspirations, this lad. I mean, it's not an easy team to get up. To get on now, you know, we've mentioned all the European success this year, but if Wallace could win this week, it would put him back on the radar for that team. He's been in decent nick. He was 26th in the Puerto Rico Open, 26th again in the Texas Open last time out. Missed a couple of cuts in between those two events on the PGA Tour, but both by just a single shot. He's taken time to get going this year, but I don't think we should forget how good he was at the end of last year. He finished last year on the DP World Tour in really impressive fashion. I think maybe a return to such a happy hunting ground this week will kickstart his season. You must bear in mind that he's only played in the Corrales once before and he won it. So he's got 100% record of success at this track.
Yeah, watching the Masters this week, Steve, I mean, you touched upon it briefly before about the Ryder Cup. It does make you feel upbeat and confident as a European to see all of these players performing as well as they are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I say, this could be the greatest golf season ever, really. If Rory McIlroy does the calendar Grand Slam, which is entirely feasible, it will be the greatest golfing year ever. But we've also then have a Ryder Cup, which you sort of think that the hostile home crowd, the New York crowd, the Americans have got such an advantage there. But yeah, Americans are not winning any golf tournaments. And the Europeans win all of them. So you might end up with the European being the stronger side. Whether that'll be enough to overcome the bear pit atmosphere, I don't know. But it's certainly building into an absolute classic.
Well, Luke Donald will be a very happy man at the moment with how things are going, and he'll certainly have an interesting decision to make if Matt Wallace wins in the Dominican Republic this week. So that is the first two selections. Who's pick number three, Steve?
So another European, actually, is Matty Schmidt, 27-year-old German, excellent amateur, contended on the DP World Tour for a bit. Then he turned his attention to the States. The last 3 years, he's played mainly on the PGA Tour. And a lot of his best results have come in tournaments like this one, on tropical islands in a low grade. He was third in the 2023 Bermuda Championship, sixth in the Puerto Rico Open this year, 10th in the Puerto Rico Open last year, 11th in this, the Corrales Punta Cana, last year. I think he's better than most of this field. Yes, it's a weak field. Schmidt's got plenty of potential, so I think he'll go close to a maiden PGA Tour title.
Coody, Wallace and Schmidt then so far for the first three selections. And finally, pick number four, Steve, for the Corrales Punta Cana Championship.
Aldrich Potgieter, who nearly won the Mexico Open at the end of February. A playoff defeat there. He won the Amateur Championship in 2022. He won on the Corn Ferry Tour in the Bahamas at the start of last year. So he loves the Bahamas. I think he'll like the Dominican Republic. This is a 20-year-old finding his feet in the professional ranks. He was second in the Nedbank Challenge at the end of last year. He was 15th in the Farmers Insurance Open in January. So clearly got loads of talent. I think he's good enough to threaten in this grade.
Okay, well, there are the four selections for Steve for that Corrales Punta Cana Championship, one of two tournaments on the US PGA Tour this week, the other being the standout, the RBC Heritage in South Carolina. Say, it's strange that such a big tournament comes off the back of the Masters, but certainly one to look forward to because there's a number of big names involved, including the likes of Scottie Scheffler, Colin Morikawa, Ludvig Hobert and Xander Schauffele, amongst those towards the top of the betting. It's a stellar field, Steve, and what will they have to attack in terms of the course?
It's the Harbortown Links, Hilton Head Island, South Carolina, 7,213 yards, par 71, three par fives, a peak die design, created in 1969, revised in 2000. Players can only score well here by hitting it straight. You've got tight targets and good scrambling is essential around some of the smallest greens you'll see all year. The Heritage was given signature event status for the first time in 2023. So the elite, not contracted, but encouraged to turn up at these events. Most of the elite have. Rory McIlroy is having a well-deserved week off. Hideki Matsuyama doesn't fancy it. We got sunny and pleasant weather all week. Light to moderate breezes. The field is 72, was it? And no cut.
This is another jacket up for grabs, isn't it? Isn't it the tartan jacket that they get?
Yeah, it is. Rory's not interested in that one. He's got his green one now. It's great when you get a jacket, isn't it?
It is. Lovely little addition to it. And I know that there's obviously the lighthouse, the Heritage as well. And I remember Matt Fitzpatrick winning that in fine style as well. He is amongst the field this week, looking to try and gain another European success. How many selections then, Steve, for the RBC Heritage?
Just got three in this one. Yeah, we've got a 5-4-3 formation.
5-4-3 this week then. And the main selection then for this event?
Sungjae Im, who bounced back to form in style last week. He finished fifth in the Masters. It's a huge confidence boost. I particularly like how sharp he was with his short game. You know, short game skills, as we mentioned, really important at the Harbortown Links. Small greens, lots of scrambling required. Sungjae was chipping in from all parts of Augusta last week. He started the year well. He was third in the Century, fourth in the Farmers Insurance Open. Then he's had this quiet spell, which ended last week, sparked into life at the perfect place to do so. And I think the Heritage is an ideal event to follow up. He was 13th in the Heritage in 2021, 21st in 2022. And he's actually raised his game since this tournament got signature event status. 7th in 2023, 12th last year. He missed the cut in the Masters before finishing 12th last year. You know, he's coming with huge amounts of confidence this time. He closed the 69 at Augusta. You know, it's a brilliant closing round of 69. The iron play much improved. He'd been struggling with that during the quiet spell. So I love what I'm seeing from Sungjae going into this event. In an event which a lot of the big names might be a bit sluggish, I think Sungjae, after that quiet spell, sees this great opportunity for a third PGA Tour title.
Tries to build on that excellent Sunday at Augusta. Just before we get Steve's other two tips, by the way, for the RBC Heritage, just a little note that SBK are running 25% winnings boost on the RBC Heritage this week. If you pick the winner, you can expect a 25% winnings boost exclusively from SBK. Will it be Sungjae Im who is holding up that trophy on Sunday, or one of Steve's other two selections? Who's pick number two, Steve?
Daniel Berger, who is fully fit again, loving life, playing better than ever, I would say. Supremely accurate now. Harbortown Links seems a perfect spot for him to get back to winning ways. We're talking about a four-time PGA Tour champion. His last win came by the coast in 2021, the Pebble Beach Pro-Am. He's had loads of injury problems since then. Full of confidence again now, though. Last week's share of 21st place in the Masters is a sign of how much progress he's made. He closed with a 69, like Sungjae Im. Yeah, there weren't many rounds in the 60s on Sunday. Im and Berger had two of them. He's headed to Hilton Head full of beans. He's had seven top 20s this season. He was second in the RSM Classic by the coast in November, second in the Phoenix Open in February, 20th at Sawgrass last month, third at the Heritage in 2020, 13th in 2021. So, yeah, Daniel Berger just a must for the staking plan. It's very hard to see him, you know, failing to contend in this.
So it is Sungjae Im and Daniel Berger as the first two selections. And if neither of those two are going to win, Steve, who's the third most likely player?
Bud Cawley, who has enjoyed a wonderful career renaissance. You talk about Berger's injury problems. Bud Cawley has had much more serious injury problems. He was actually in a car crash which nearly killed him in 2018. Five broken ribs, was a broken leg, a collapsed lung. You know, this is a lad who's got plenty of golf in perspective. You know, it's easy to lose perspective when you're in the golf bubble. You know, Cawley is aware of what's important. He's delighted to be here. It's been a long battle back for Bud Cawley, but this year he's looking like the player who dazzled us as a youngster. You know, I was harking back to 2010 and playing golf with Rory McIlroy earlier in this broadcast. But in 2010, I was also dazzled by Bud Cawley. He was one of the most promising youngsters on the PGA Tour. He was the number one junior in America, and it seemed like he was going to have a glorious professional career, but injuries have stopped that happening. He's 35 years of age now. He resumed his professional career after the car crash drama at the start of last year, went back on the Korn Ferry Tour, and then eased his way back onto the PGA Tour with medical exemptions, of course. Finished fifth in the Sanderson Farms Championship in October. And in recent weeks, he's just been right back to his best. It is like going back 15 years because Bud Cawley finished sixth in the Players' Championship, fourth in the Valspar, fifth in the Texas Open. Yeah, the Cawley's comeback, just a joy to watch. His PGA Tour debut came in the Heritage in 2010. It could be an amazing story if he returns 15 years later to the scene of his first PGA Tour event and then wins his maiden PGA Tour title after all the lows he's been through. Yeah, I worry that maybe I've just become an old romantic now. I used to be a hard-nosed punter, but McIlroy's got me going. And you know, maybe I'm being a bit of a softie here, thinking Bud Cawley's going to provide another wonderful tale for us this year. But he's playing so well. So I think we're going to get another triumph for humanity day.
What a story it would be after last week for that to follow up with Bud Cawley. That would be amazing. We can't leave the RBC heritage, Steve, though, without mentioning some of the other big names at the top of the betting at the moment. And the reasons for leaving out the likes of Scotty Scheffler, Ludovic Aubert, and also Colin Morikawa, just jaded maybe from last week?
Yeah, and you know, Scheffler, we mentioned before how Scheffler's been very agitated this year. Impossible act to follow. Yeah, you win 9 times last year. You come out this year, you're not winning tournaments, and he's getting grumpy. I thought he was being grumpy in the Butler cabin, actually. I don't know if you saw it when he presented. Yeah. he gave Rory his jacket and just walked off.
I've had to hang around for a playoff. I want to get myself off.
he seemed really grumpy, but then later on when I saw him, because he had to present the jacket twice, actually. Then when they were outside doing it again in front of the spectators, he was laughing and joking. I've seen lots of mood swings from Scheffler this year that have not been encouraging. He's probably more motivated for the Heritage than many of the big names, because he's obviously keen to get back to winning ways so people stop talking about the victory drought, the 7 tournament victory drought. people are saying, who's the best player in the world? Amazingly, if you said that at the end of last year, he hasn't no debate, but yeah, that debate is open now, isn't it? Who's the best player in the world, was it?
I'm not going to put Ben on the chopping block, but you'd have to say McIlroy at the moment, to be honest with you.
You would. On the evidence of this year, Rory McIlroy, the best player in the world. As I say, I think the future, this summer could just be absolutely remarkably good for Rory McIlroy. So Scheffler probably motivated, but the short game's been scratchy. He was ragged. He was ragged in round 2 or round 3, in the middle of the tournament. I was really unimpressed. He had some lucky breaks, actually. Do you remember the shot into the par 3 12th? It went high up into the flower beds, and then miraculously found its way down, and he chipped in for birdie. That could have been a triple bogey if it hangs up in the flower beds there. So
Nick Faldo brilliantly suggested there was a squirrel behind there that threw the ball back. It went that high up and behind the bank, and you kind of look at it and think, how on earth has that ball come straight back down again?
I don't think they let squirrels in at Augusta, do they? I think they shoot all the squirrels because they just want it all to be pristine. They don't want a squirrel eating the azaleas. Goodness knows. I think it was probably the nicely mown pine needles. Everything is so perfect and immaculate, isn't it? Yeah. So you've even got them sort of gently brushing the pine needles, and it found its way off that. Sorry, I'm rambling away. But I think Scheffler has not been as impressive this year, and he's not really getting any bigger in price, is he? It's no bargain. If he wins this week, I can handle not being on him.
Yeah. No, there's a couple of other players I was going to point out to as well, Steve. Corey Connors, who's been in really good form of late. And then obviously Shane Lowry as well, who was there or thereabouts until the sort of final round at Augusta. And I just wonder whether, they might come out of that slightly disappointed in terms of where they ended up finishing.
Yeah, it was a classic Corey Connors performance, hanging around on the leaderboard and then missing putts that, you or I would be embarrassed to miss. He missed one of the shortest putt I saw missed last week was by Corey Connors, which is no surprise. If they'd had a market on that, that'd be a good betting market. They lay odds on everything, don't they? Who's going to miss the shortest putt of the week? You did have Connors as favourite for that. On a track where you need to scramble well this week, he wouldn't be for me. And Shane Lowry, we don't know the condition of Shane Lowry. He did have the choice of spending yesterday in the pub. I had 3 tournaments to look into, but Shane Lowry had that option. I would imagine took it. He would have been at the heart of the celebrations. I wouldn't be surprised if he turns up a little bit worse for wear for this tournament.
You wouldn't blame him if that was the case.
You wonder whether he was drinking on Sunday, actually, because he shot 81 on Sunday and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. So many bets went wrong last week. I thought the Lowry top 20 bet was an absolute certainty going into the final round. And then he shoots 81 to finish 42nd. Maybe there was a few tinctures. There were certainly a few tinctures taking place on Sunday night. I think Lowry, you've got to... Yeah, this course is great for Lowry, but I just can't see him getting his game face back on in time for it.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that is the RBC Heritage completed then for this week. And as we say, plenty of tips from Steve across all 3 of the tournaments to look forward to, and we'll reflect on those now. Steve, starting off with the China Open, just remind us of your five selections.
Yes, sir. I would like to apologise for last week's tips. I'm not making light of it. I suffered more than most. I can assure you. But we're gonna get back on track this week, and with the China Open, we got Wen Yeding, Kaito Nakajima, Sam Bairstow, Angel Ayora, and Oliver Lindell.
And we have four selections for the Corrales Punta Cana Championship. Who are they, Steve?
Pearson Coody, Matt Wallace, Matty Schmid, and Aldrich Potgieter.
And finally, the RBC Heritage. Three tips for that big event in the USA, even this week. Just remind us of the three selections.
Sungjae Im, Daniel Berger, and Bud Cawley.
Okay, they are Steve's tips for this week. I was just about to say to you, you know, you can maybe put your feet up a little bit, I was going to say, at the end of this after last week. But three tournaments, you're going to try and keep your eyes on all three throughout the week?
Yeah, I desperately need some sleep. I mean, they're so tired. It wasn't just the Masters. My mum was in hospital at the weekend. So I really want, my mum's back home now. I want her to rest all week rather than going out gardening. If you're watching mum, this is the problem. she thinks she's invincible, spends like 7 hours gardening in the sunshine and wonders whether... she struggles afterwards. So mum needs to rest. I need to rest. But yeah, we'll do that once these three tournaments are over.
Steve's mum, put your feet up, watch the golf. Okay. Yeah. Nothing more relaxing than that.
That's it. Unless you're following my master's tips.
Steve, thanks very much indeed for all your efforts this week. It's been a tiring week, but an unforgettable week in terms of the golf. Thank you all for watching. And also your comments as well on the Racing Post YouTube channel. Dave Clark will be back next week with Steve next Tuesday to preview the Zurich Classic of New Orleans, the Heinen Classic, and also Live Golf Mexico City as well. Don't miss that. But in the meantime, please like, comment, share, and subscribe. And enjoy your golf this week. And remember to gamble responsibly.